Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Besom, Stang, and Sword, a guide to traditional witchcraft, the sixfold path, and the hidden landscape, by Christopher Orapello and Tara Love Maguire. Narrated by Paul Bamer. This book contains advice and information relating to herbs, and is not meant to diagnose, treat, or prescribe. It should be used to supplement, not replace, the advice of your physician or other trained healthcare practitioner. If you know or suspect you have a medical condition, are experiencing physical symptoms, or if you feel unwell, seek your physician's advice before embarking on any medical program or treatment. Some of the substances discussed in this book can be lethal if mishandled or ingested in sufficient quantities. Extreme caution is advised in their handling and use. Listeners using the information in this book do so entirely at their own risk, and the author and publisher accept no liability if adverse effects are caused. Introduction. For those who have gone before, and those who have yet to be. In the spring of 2014, we began the journey that this book has grown to embody, the development of a modern system of regional traditional witchcraft. It sprang forth from our finally coming together as a couple to practice magic and ritual, after never having done so since we first met in the summer of 2001. This system, which morphed out of our individual paths and influences, came to be called Black Tree, a name that, at first, only reflected our fascination with the curious blackthorn tree. We later realized that this tree held a much deeper significance for what we were doing, specifically because of the black tree, which is our name and spelling for a symbol that we use in our practice. The black tree path became our unique form of traditional witchcraft. It distinctly reflects our individual North American upbringings, but is also inspired by the writings of Robert Cochran, as well as those of Sarah Ann Lawless, Peter Patton, Gemma Gary, Nigel Pinnock, Paul Hewson, Andrew Chumley, and many others. Traditional witchcraft initially caught our interest because of how it differed from the more common forms of Wicca that have been so prevalent over the past 50 years. The realization that people were looking to the past in a new way through the scholarly pursuits of Carlo Ginzburg, Jeffrey B. Russell, Emma Wilby, Claude Lecuteau, Eva Pox, and others spoke to us. This was not myopic adherence to tradition for tradition's sake. It was the building of a strong, practical foundation with historical research, personal insight, and critical thought. This knowledge invigorated our practice and confirmed what we had been feeling for many years, that many of the more commonly practiced paths of today's paganism and the various offshoots of Wicca all contained elements that we felt were irrelevant to our lives. We sought to establish a system of witchcraft more in tune with our needs, as well as the needs of other witches like us. The Black Tree tradition, and this book, grew out of that budding desire. Black Tree is a modern, non-religious form of traditional witchcraft that is rooted in each witch's specific region. Instead of deities, it deals with the spirits of the land and the ancestors. No gods, many spirits, as we like to say. It is largely concerned with readdressing what it means to practice witchcraft beyond the tropes of modern Western paganism. Rather than being based in ceremonial magic, the practices of Black Tree are more shamanistic in nature and differ in both method and intent from the fertility-minded, deity-based Wiccan streams of witchcraft. It is a modern approach to witchcraft that retains a keen awareness of the history and lore deep in its bones and blood. In this book, we hope to provide seasoned practitioners with a new way to deepen their practice, as well as to introduce fledgling witches to the essentials of witchcraft. Our perspective anchors itself with one foot firmly planted in the lessons of the past and the other stepping into the boldest future while staying focused on the natural evolution of the craft. Like the Fool card of the tarot, we are never leaping into tomorrow. This book lays before you a toolkit full of rituals, spells, exercises, and techniques that are steeped in a new perspective on practicing witchcraft in the modern day. It places witchcraft in a new light, one that shines brightly on a new era of praxis for neophytes and adepts alike. Bendith, Success and Blessings, Chris and Tara. Chapter 1. Traditional Witchcraft. Traditional witchcraft is a wild beast with many parents and even more children. At its very core, it is a chimera of folk magic, shamanism, history, ancestor veneration, and respect for the land. But it can be a little difficult to pin down its actual definition. Essentially, traditional witchcraft splits into two main categories: magical traditions and cultural practices. You can find a number of modern magical traditions under its overarching umbrella. The clan of Tubal Cain, Victor and Cora Anderson's Fairy, 1734, and the Cultus Sabbati, all of which have been influenced by earlier modern witchcraft and personal gnosis. The traditions that fall under this banner also tend to eschew dogma in favor of symbolism and imagery steeped in folklore. These paths are magical in nature and heavy in historical research and individual responsibility, with an emphasis on connecting with the environment. On the other side of the definition, traditional witchcraft also encompasses widespread cultural practices like seder, hoodoo, brujería, and curanderismo, which also involve the use of rituals, energy work, folk magic, divination, and close contact with spirits. These are all integral aspects of witchcraft itself, although individual practitioners of these paths may not actually refer to themselves as witches, and we must be careful not to disrespect their individual self-identification when discussing them. Black Tree Witchcraft, the tradition behind this book, draws elements and style from both the magical and the cultural sides of traditional witchcraft and blends them into a cohesive whole. It is generally North American in nature. After all, that's where we are from, but can easily be applied to any region. In addition, it owes a particular debt to the work of Roy Bowers, better known as Robert Cochran. It is simply impossible to discuss traditional witchcraft in any capacity without bringing Robert Cochran's name into it. Cochran emerged on the English scene in 1963, just when witchcraft was enjoying its modern revival in the United States and Britain. Despite his short 3-year involvement, he made a lasting impression that echoes still. Whether this impression was good or bad depends on whom you ask. Cochran was a firebrand who loved nothing more than stirring the pot, and he gathered as many enemies as friends. In his opinion, magic was a byproduct of the search for truth, and he spoke of a witchcraft that was more mystical in nature, focused on the realization of truth rather than its illusion. In his opinion, magic grew out of the search for truth. He suggested a re-examination of all sacred cows to see if they still produced milk and sought a reinvestigation of past cultures and practices in order to determine if they held any useful truths. Traditional witchcraft, as presented in this book, takes Cochrane's notion of witchcraft a step further. Instead of basing our magical practice on the past in an attempt to achieve authenticity, why not also look to the present, or to our immediate surroundings? Why not contact the local land spirits? If witchcraft ever existed in the world, then it exists just as much in the here and now as it ever did in the past. The notion that witchcraft is solely a phenomenon of the past, or that it must be sought in far-off lands, or that it's only found by studying and embracing ancient cultures or deities, ignores the very reality of the practice itself, as well as the power and connection we already have to our immediate surroundings. The substance, lore, and magic that we can acquire from our regional landscape are far more personal and substantial than any other connection we would ever hope to establish with any antiquated worldview or culture that is foreign to us. This book contains a new approach to witchcraft. It brings you into a territory that may seem alien at first, but one that will swiftly begin to feel like home. Our approach bypasses all the romanticized New Age fertility rites, harvest festivals, and medieval role-playing that have become so persistently intertwined with modern paganism and witchcraft, and emphasizes a deeper engagement with the land itself. Rather than enjoining you to commune with far-flung and aloof deities, this witchcraft leads you to interact with your ancestors, both nameless and blood-bound. We encourage you to make contact with the spirit of your own personal place in this world, and to be unafraid of getting your hands dirty doing the work you aspire to accomplish. What is witchcraft? When we examine the history and cultural diversity of witchcraft, we learn that it is not actually a religion, but instead a practice. Cochrane might argue that witchcraft is not paganism, although it retains the memory of ancient faiths. Someone living in Europe several centuries ago might have described it in terms of sorcery, cursing, consorting with devils and demons, or performing necromantic acts. In those days, as now, many perceived witchcraft as a transgressive act, furtively performed in private and hidden from view. The terms witch and witchcraft were not viewed as positive. Instead, they were pejoratives used to denounce, demonize, and condemn folk practitioners, or anyone else for that matter, who were unfortunate enough to draw the wrong attention or upset the wrong types of people. While over the last century, a distorted and privileged view of witchcraft emerged, at least in First World countries. Indeed, prior to its 20th century revival, witchcraft wasn't considered a comfortable or safe practice. It was not viewed as a community faith tradition that was open and welcoming to the public, let alone one that came complete with children's groups, bake sales, and petitions for societal recognition. It's important to understand that outside the bounds of modern neo-paganism, witchcraft is not about the goddess or a goddess. It is not about the god or a god. It is not about seasonal celebrations commemorating the cycles of life, death, and rebirth. It is not about procuring a good harvest, literally or metaphorically. It is not about reliving the past or dancing in a cloak while drinking wine or wearing flowers in your hair. It's not even necessarily about being pagan. Witchcraft is about sovereignty. Witchcraft and sovereignty. Witchcraft ties deeply into matters of personal governance and individual control. It addresses, with blood and sweat, the ills of life and society. In the hands of those who won't sit idle as life just happens to them, it's a tool for change. It's about magic and spells, herbs and spirits, flying and divining. It's about living in the world, for better or worse. It is raw. It is dirty. It is a skill set, a discipline. It is an art. Witchcraft is dwelling in the woods where people rarely go. It can be found right in your yard, in a nearby park, or in an undefiled and wild land. It is resting in foreign caves and beneath silent trees. It even dwells in the endless bowels of the city, a living entity all its own. It is basking under the moon at night, breathing slowly beneath the silent stars. Witchcraft is all of these things, and it has always been there, waiting to be rediscovered. It is a response to the fears lurking in the darkness, and a means to deal with them. It is a weapon. It is a talent. It is an instinct. Witchcraft is not simply about magic. That is why there are sorcerers. Witchcraft is not just about herbs. That is why there are herbalists. Witchcraft is not only about divination or contacting spirits. That is why there are psychics and mediums. Witchcraft is something wholly, entirely different. It is a lifestyle, a vocation, a liminal space defined by experience. It is a virtual crossroads where several paths meet and create their own space by virtue of their intersection. Witchcraft is a methodology. It is a multifaceted practice that combines several skills and avenues of knowledge. The paths that comprise it sit squarely upon the landscape of history and folklore, individually distinguishable as magic, divination, and herbalism. Magic leads to spells and exerting your will upon the cosmos to influence desired changes and effects. Divination is the act and process of divine seeing and foretelling the future. Herbalism is the knowledge and application of herbs for medicinal, culinary, and ritual use. The combination and interplay of these three streams of knowledge enable other practices like seership, soul flight, and necromancy to take shape. It is only when these various practices are blended together that witchcraft emerges as a distinct practice that uniquely combines history and folklore, magic, divination, herbalism, hedge witchery, and necromancy into a unifying system that we refer to collectively as the sixfold path. Magic, divining, working with and growing herbs, having visions, flying out of the body, and consorting with ghosts of the dead. Witchcraft is all of these things. It consists of no religion or dogma. It has no need for clergy. It worships no deities. It celebrates no intrinsically holy days. Witchcraft is a practice that is focused on successful function, rather than being beholden to the aesthetics, symbols, and affectations of 19th century occultism. Witchcraft is secular and filthy, dirty, figuratively and literally. There will be times when you walk through your everyday life bearing the stains of some working you've performed. The evidence may be anything: the faint scent of scrying incense in your hair, a smudge of charcoal on your cheek, dirt under your fingernails. You will look at these traces of your craft, and only you will know what they represent, and that knowledge will give you strength, a secret shield. You will look at them and think to yourself, "I did that," and your face will flush briefly from the power of that knowledge. Your power. The Devil and the Craft. We certainly cannot deny that the devil, or a devil, has been a key figure in many European accounts of witchcraft. He has been described as the witch-maker, the grand initiator. Indeed, He was the primary reason that witchcraft became synonymous with heresy from the Middle Ages through the early modern period. It is from this association that older forms of witchcraft came to be labeled as diabolism, as they were widely understood to involve working with or worshipping the devil. It's no secret that the classic iconography of the devil, horns, forked tongue, goat legs, and pitchfork, originates in several pagan deities or nature spirits. Images and lore involving Pan, Puck, Hades, Cernunnos, Herne, and others were forerunners of the iconic image of the Christian devil, who was generally depicted as a black-winged, bat-like monster prior to the 19th century. This portrayal contrasted strongly with the typical imagery of white-winged angels like that of Lucifer prior to his fall. Other stories about the devil are rooted in fairy lore, where he appears as a man in black, riding to the hunt with his hounds and the Queen of Elfame. His mutable appearance and developing role grew and changed alongside the imagery and lore of witchcraft, an evolution that continues to this day and into the foreseeable future. To a Christian, the devil embodies sin and everything that good Christians should avoid. This implies, however, that if you are not a Christian, there is no reason at all to avoid the devil or what he represents. However, many modern witches are distinctly and quite vocally not Christian, but still find themselves arguing defensively that this Christian devil has nothing to do with their horned god. No doubt this is an argument based in self-preservation. The fact is, however, that while on the surface this may be true for many modern witches, the history of the devil and the horned god, the witch lord or witch father as some call him, are virtually one and the same. Moreover, their sameness is not actually a bad thing, nor is it something we should shy away from acknowledging or even celebrating. Indeed, it can be tricky for traditional witches to turn their backs on the devil. In doing so, we run the risk of distorting the history of witchcraft as it developed in the Western world and missing what it can still reveal to us for use in our modern practice. By rejecting what the devil encompasses or represents, we condemn what it means to be completely human, a creature of the earth, including the wildness and carnality of nature. This further instills in us the dangerously romantic view of nature as a benevolent force that looks out for our best interests. In reality, nature is not our caretaker nor our friend. We must never forget this. Nature is red in tooth and claw, the living modifications we have needed to develop just for basic survival reveal this to be undeniably true. Nature cares for us about as much as we do for a random hair found growing in a weird location. We cut it off or pluck it out without a thought. Just a momentary wince, and it's gone. Nature is a monster, as well as a thing of beauty and wonder. It has teeth and bites the hardest those who attempt to make it pink and pretty gossamer. This is not to say, however, that we should not protect and value nature. Far from it. Nature requires our stewardship, the forging of a deep connection between animal and human. As humans, we now live outside of the wild, in a world of shoes and cars and condominiums. But still, we dream. We now understand that the complexity of life is painted in shades of gray rather than black and white. We can see that it is time to tear down the tired, dueling archetypes of pure good and evil. As a representation of the wildness of nature, the devil reflects our own place in this complexity, human united with animal. Or go further and strip the devil of the many layers of myth and legend he has accrued over the centuries. Approach him as he truly is, nature itself, in its most absolute form. We embrace the devil as a symbol of humanity, as a creature of the earth, not as a trifling villain who encourages self-deception and self-loathing, or a childish pawn employed by a narcissistic creator. There is no longer a need for that in this world. We have gone beyond such vanities. We have evolved and developed our own moral codes, an innate sense of the essential dichotomy of right and wrong. In our craft, we call upon the devil as the witch lord, the lord of paths, and the uniter of worlds. He is the embodiment of nature itself. He unites the worlds within and without, above and below. He is like Eliphas Levi's iconic 19th century image of Baphomet, a blended representation of the manifested world, not good, not evil, but a duality, an integral part of the ebb and flow of existence. As we make our way into these other realms, the Witch Lord is our guide, our contact, our touchstone. We do not worship him, however. He is not a deity. Instead, he is the primary spirit of place and a primordial force, the devil for a new millennia of practice. Animism. Animism is a term coined by Sir Edward Tyler, known as the father of anthropology, during the late 19th century. In some ways, the term may be interpreted as meaning doctrine of soul, as it derives from anima, the Greek word for soul, and the Latin word for life or spirit. The word animated also derives from this root. If something is animated, the implication is that it's alive, that it has a soul or some kind of consciousness. Witchcraft thus exists quite well within an animistic worldview. Indeed, it almost demands it through its use of herbs and its interaction with spirits, especially the spirits of the dead. It makes sense that witchcraft is an animistic path, one that perceives everything as having a soul, including rocks, plants, trees, animals, the land, a field of flowers, the vast and wild forest, a waterfall, or the sea. On some level, all things are conscious and capable of interaction in an animistic world. By extension, all things in an animistic world must be treated as living things because they are. This may sound a bit dogmatic, but it isn't. An animistic worldview is simply a different way to relate to the land and the cosmos, a fuller perception of the world that allows us to exist within it without making too much of a mess of things. Animism views all things as distinct beings, each with its own consciousness and soul. One is one, but within the all. An animistic view does not collapse all things of the world into an overarching one. It implies no underlying monotheism or divine source. All things are connected, but still remain distinct. Thus, individual beings or objects or places may possess unique and differing purposes and temperaments. This explains why some places may feel less welcoming than others, something you may have experienced in an old building or while walking in the woods. Beings gather where places are untouched or long abandoned, and personalities of places may change over time due to interaction with other beings or just through the natural progression of life. To animists, the world is most certainly alive, and it sings in a million voices, a singular chorus of life. To witches, the world is a complex interaction of animate beings with distinct means and ends. Part of becoming a witch is learning to cultivate those relationships to aid us in our craft. Becoming a witch.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?